hell that I was in, I'd do anything to be better.
I thought like a lunatic.
You kind of just have like that little bit of hope that it will get better.
You're gonna make it.
This began my surrender.
I am a witness of my own growth.
It's a life beyond your wildest dreams, and I just have to say, it works if you work it.
My story, that's what I share.
You're listening to Far From Finished, a weekly podcast where we share new, real-life stories of hope and triumph, told by the people who live them. Today's story comes to us from...
Hello, my name is Tim, and I am an addict. I'm going to begin by expressing my gratitude towards American Addiction Centers, Desert Hope, and 12-Step Fellowships. Because of these three things, I have the life that I have today. It's a life worth living. I'm very grateful. I'm very grateful today I can look another human being in the eye and just be grateful for the human being that I am today. I was born in 1987 in a small town in Connecticut. I was born into a very loving family, traditional family, with two older sisters and a lot of cousins in the area, a lot of support. And when I was a kid, you know, we got to go on a lot of vacations. Whatever I wanted, I got pretty much. I was very spoiled. And I acted out a lot when I was a kid. When I didn't get what I wanted, I would act out. I'd throw a fit until I got that thing, whatever it was, whether it be sugar when I was a little kid, candy, anything like that. Money when I grew up a little bit older in my teens, I would want money to go out and play video games or, you know, just do anything. I would act out a lot. So going into about middle school, I started rebelling against my family because I felt I had, before I knew what a resentment was, I had some sort of resentment against them for putting so many expectations on me, for being a successful person like my parents were and like my sisters were. And this put a lot of stress on me. I wanted to rebel against them by doing whatever it was they told me not to do. This began by just taking my sister's car, hanging out with people that they didn't want me to hang out with, hanging out with girls, anything that it made me feel better about myself somehow by doing what they told me not to do. I feel this is where everything began. In middle school, there were so many different cliques, and I wasn't sure who I wanted to hang out with, who I wanted to. I didn't feel like I fit in with anybody except for the people who rebelled against authority, whether the authority be parents, the school system, the police, the courts. This was like my first rush, my first high, my first feeling good about myself. We caused a lot of mayhem in my town, and whatever we could destroy, we would destroy. We didn't really care about anybody or anything. And this is where I first got introduced to substances, mood or mind-altering substances. I tried drinking at a young age. I was probably 14, 15, 16, somewhere in that area. I really don't know, but I didn't really like it. But I tried it because I wanted to fit in. And then a new substance, something I've never heard of, came around. It's marijuana. And I tried that. I got really dizzy, and it wasn't working for me. Around the age of 15, I started going to a lot of concerts. I started hanging out with people that liked a certain kind of music. My parents being very successful, doing a lot of things for me, they would buy me all these concert tickets and let me go hang out with friends. And I'd trade these concert tickets for the drug of my choice. This opiates gave me a feeling that it made me feel like I fit in, like I didn't. I no longer needed to try to fit in with people or be accepted or people please or anything like that. It made me a little more open, isolated less. I pretty much felt like the king of the world when I was high on opiates. This progressed very quickly. I started using, you know, just on the weekends. I figured this is all I needed to do is I get through school, just use on the weekends when I go to concerts, when I go to family picnics or parties or anything like that, just to feel more accepted. I would use to get out of the feeling that whatever I was feeling that day, whether it be angry, sad, lonely, depressed, drugs would pick me up out of that, and I would feel a lot better. Like I said, this progressed to a point where I was stealing whatever I could get my hands on to get some more money. When I turned 14 or 15, I started working for my dad, and this is he had a heating and air conditioning company. He would pay me really well, but he wouldn't give me the money. He'd put it into an account, and he'd say, you know, when you're old enough to have this money to buy a car or whatever you want, we'll give you this money. So when I turned 18, I got this money, and it didn't go towards a car. It didn't go towards a down payment on a house, which I really did have enough for. It went straight to my drug addiction. It was gone before I got it. And then once that ran out, I started stealing. I stole from the people that were closest to me because they were the easiest to manipulate. My family, my mom and dad, my sisters. Anytime they weren't looking, I'd take $20 from their purse, even at a young age. Like I said, I like to really rebel against these people. And I started calling out of work a lot, at least once every 2 weeks. My dad was a very easy to manipulate. I knew I had a job whether I called out or not because I worked for family and I didn't have to worry about it. Usually he still paid me. If I called out, he would still pay me whatever money I lost. The total self-centeredness grew and grew. The only person that I cared about was myself, pleasing myself, getting the things that I want, just like when I was a kid, acting out. It's just the drugs were a symptom of my disease. The drugs weren't the problem. The problem was me. I wanted what I wanted, and I wanted it now. And if I didn't get it, there'd be hell to pay. So as my disease progressed, the pills I were using, they stopped working. They started getting very expensive, and they stopped working. And I found a drug called heroin. I believe this unleashed a whole new demon inside me. It is an opiate, just like the painkillers, but it was just a whole new drug. And I wrecked my car a few times. I totaled the car. Really took everything from me. Everything that I had that I worked for was gone. Dirt bikes, musical instruments, whatever I had that was of value was gone before I knew it. And this just added to my guilt, my shame, not living up to my parents' expectation. My parents gave me an ultimatum. They said, you need to move out. I was 24. They said, you got to move out or go to treatment, one or the other. But you're not living like this anymore, they said. And trying to tell an addict in active addiction what to do really is one of the worst things you can do. We will rebel. And so anyway, I really liked the bed that I slept in, and I liked the roof over my head. So I said, sure, you know, I'll go to treatment for you guys. And really in my head, it was just a 30-day vacation for me. So my parents shelled out about $20,000 for me to go to a treatment center in Connecticut. I really didn't want to be there. It was hell for me. It was felt like a lifetime. I didn't want to do anything that they told me to do. We had to get up at this time. We had to go to classes at this time. It was very new to me, and I didn't like it too much. But when I got out, my parents, you know, they saw the smile that I had on my face. They saw that, and they liked it. Like they thought that, you know, I was cured. But little did they know, the day that I left for treatment, I hid a lot of drugs around my house. Anywhere that I could, I hid crack and heroin. And they didn't know it, but the reason I was smiling was because I knew that as soon as I got home, which was about in 20 minutes, I would be high and I would be able to get out of myself again. And it would be right back to the races. And I thought I'd be able to start from day one. And use just a little bit every day, just on the weekends or just at a party. But I started right where I left off, as soon as I got home and sat on the couch, I started nodding off, and my parents saw that I had used, and once again, they were in a really bad place, just like I was, and they didn't really know what to do. They've never been around this kind of thing, so I went for another year, and this was by far the worst year of my addiction. I think it was May 14th, 2013, I tried committing suicide. I drove my car out into the woods, and I tried using the exhaust gas from my car to asphyxiate myself, I think is the word. Combined with that, I also used a deadly combination of drugs to just try to kill myself. I was okay with death at the time. I was in such a bad place, I would rather be dead than have to live the life that I was leading. It's still hard even saying that to this day. That was over 2 years ago, and I can't believe that I would even try doing that. But that's the disease is insidious, and it makes us do things that we wouldn't do clean. So when I woke up that morning, I was in a pile of leaves next to my car with the door open, and I remember vivid dreams of people walking around the car. Now, I was far into the woods. I was about 20 minutes away from any kind of civilization. So I don't think there were any people around the car, but I remember something peering in. Maybe it was some kind of a higher power or some kind of a guardian angel there telling me that I didn't need to do this. So when I woke up to the sun shining, it was a beautiful spring morning. This began my surrender. This was the beginning of my surrender. I said, I don't want to live like this anymore. I need to get some help. I was sick and tired of manipulating the people that I was manipulating, and I decided that I'm ready to get some help. And I went home and looked my parents in the eye for the first time in about 5 years and told them I need some help. I hadn't been able to look my parents in the eye for a long time because of how badly I was manipulating them and how bad I felt inside and the things I had to do to just wake up every day. As soon as my eyes opened, I'd cuss. I'd say, something just because I was mad that I was actually waking up and having to live the life that I was living. So it was May 16th. It was my dad's 68th birthday. He said, come on, get in the car. I'll bring you to detox. And my dad sat in that room for 7 hours waiting for me to get inside. Like I said, my family was so supportive of me. They were willing to do whatever it took for me to get well. So for 7 hours, I sat in this detox, just waiting for a bed. And he never left my side. Finally, I did get into this detox. It was in Middletown, Connecticut. For those 5 days, I was just thinking, this is just one more time of the many times I'm going to have to go to treatment because I was in a bad place and I didn't know whether I really wanted it to get well or if I just wanted to, play an act again and make believe that I'm going to get better. I'm going to do it this time. I talked to my case manager at the detox and I let her know that I do not want to be here in Connecticut anymore. I told her I want to go to Florida. I want to go to the beach. I want to try to live a new life and start over, do the geographical. I heard it doesn't work if you don't want it, but a part of me wanted it. So she made some calls and she said, we don't have anything in Florida, but I'll give you this number. She had me call somebody from American Addiction Centers to do my phone interview. And this person's name was Jennifer. She's from Connecticut, from Glastonbury, Connecticut. Well, it was a phone intake. That's what it was, the initial phone intake. And she asked me some questions about my life, what I used, just these specific questions. And she said, we'll give you a call back in about 5 minutes or 10 minutes to let you know where we're gonna send you, because the American Addiction Centers has more than one facility across the United States. So I sat by the phone in this detox, and she called back, and she said, all right, we're going to send you to Las Vegas. And I said, what? You know, I want to get better. What are you trying to do to me? I heard this place is like Sin City. I got a little bit of a laugh out of it. It eased a little bit of tension. I thought she was kidding. I really did. But she said, no, we have a brand new facility in Las Vegas we're going to send you to. So I said, okay. You know, I took this suggestion and I went with it. The next day I was on a plane to Las Vegas. 5 days of detox wasn't really enough for me, so I was still feeling pretty sick. I got sick on the plane a few times. I was in the middle seat, and people were talking to me, and I was in a bad place, man. I did not want to hear anything from anybody. And then I hear the captain come over the speaker, and he's like, okay, we're about 30 minutes from landing. It is 105 degrees in Las Vegas, and it's 11:30 at night. And I said, oh, no. I have never been in 100-degree weather in my life, and now here we go in May. It's not even summer yet, and it's 105 degrees. I wanted that plane to turn around and go right back to where it came from. So we landed in Las Vegas, and I got a ride from somebody that worked at Desert Hope, and I can't remember her name, but she was very nice. She worked at the front desk. I was nervous, man. I'll state again, I was in a really, really bad place mentally, physically, and I had no spirituality whatsoever. There was just this void inside me that I used drugs to fill. But when I got to Desert Hope, I walked in that door and I saw the amazing lobby area, and the people welcomed me with open arms, and they said, you know, we're going to love you until you can love yourself. We're going to help you through this. So it began. Day one at Desert Hope was May 20th, 2013. I got to know everybody really quick. I was open with everybody because that's what they told me to do. They told me not to hide it, not to keep anything in to myself. The next morning I woke up and I was just so grateful to be alive. And I did not want to isolate in my room. So I went right to my classes. From day one, I started my classes. My therapist was Gina. She was amazing. She's so calm and peaceful. She gets the point across right away. You know, very helpful. If I ever needed to sit down and talk to her, she was always there. Some of the BHTs that taught some of the amazing classes. John True, he had a military-like approach, which got our attention, like right away, immediately. Ryan was another one that taught some classes. Joe, we called him Weekend Joe because he worked the weekends. He was a counselor. And Keith, all these people, I didn't know it when I first got there, but they're all in recovery as well. When I found out that the people that are teaching our classes are in recovery too, it just made it that much better, because they have been in the hell that we've been through. They knew what the solution was, and they gave a suggestion every day with their classes. And I came to Vegas, I was 185 pounds because of all the laying on the couch and the donuts and the sweets and everything else. And when I got to Desert Hope, there's a 5-star chef that cooked us, fish, chicken, really healthy food. And I was able to go to the gym twice a day. CJ is one of the BHTs. She drove us to the gym in the morning and in the evening. I was always on that bus to get to the gym. CJ came in and worked out with us, real down to earth. But I managed to lose about 30 pounds when I was at Desert Hope in 30 days, just by eating healthier, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Finally, becoming that productive member of society that we maybe once were. I got a lot from the classes at Desert Hope. They taught us a lot about the disease of addiction, they had a lot of good things to say to us. They gave out pamphlets, and we got to learn a lot from these pamphlets. I still have them today. I still look at them and I still read them. So I was coming up to the end of my stay at Desert Hope, and I got to go into carve-out at 2 weeks. After 2 weeks, I got to go into a program called carve-out. And now this was a group of about 12 people, 10 or 12 people, that were doing the thing, that were going to their classes, that didn't get written up, that were really there to get well. Joe was our counselor, and Clara was my case manager. Before carve-out, we had to go to 5 classes a day. In carve-out, we got to go to 3 classes in the morning, and then in the evening or the afternoon, Joe would take us to meetings every other day. And then when we didn't go to meetings, we would go mini-golfing or to the Hoover Dam or to Red Rock for a hike. They got to bring the people that were really there to get well. They brought them out on excursions. And it made it so much more fun. It made it something to look forward to. And at 30 days, Clara said, okay, it's time to go. And I said, can you please call my insurance and have me stay another 30? That's how much I love this place, how much I got out of it. I didn't want to leave. And Clara said, you know, you want to stay around us? You want to stay local, nearby? I'll get you into a recovery house. It happened to be about a mile down the road now. This is one of the hardest decisions I've ever had to make, because I, for the first time in my life, I was 2,500 miles away from any family, any relative, 25 years old, just not having a clue about how to, you know, be independent. But I took their suggestion and I went into a recovery house, and I got a job right away in air conditioning. This was June in Las Vegas. It's about 120 degrees. And I started working my ass off. Went to meetings. I sat there in the meetings looking down or looking at the clock to see how much locker we had before we got out of the meeting. And I called my sponsor every day, but I wasn't honest with him. I didn't let him know how I was feeling. I didn't let him know what was really going on inside my head. I just said, all right, I'll just get a sponsor so I could say I have a sponsor. I sat in this motel room for about 3 days, and then I remembered hearing in meetings that this is a 12-step fellowship. You know, we give out these suggestions to newcomers, and one of those suggestions is to call your sponsor every day and be honest with them about what's going on. So it took me 3 days to finally pick up the phone and call him, and I thought I was going to be, shunned or, talked down to or yelled at, but really he said, you know, get back into that house. Call me when you're ready to do this thing. So August 2nd, I fully invested my life into a 12-step fellowship. I have been working steps ever since. Been sponsoring people. You know, none of this would have been possible without Desert Hope. You know, I could be grateful today for the person I am. I can look another human being in the eye and be grateful for who I am. And I am so grateful for my past, because if it wasn't for the things that I've done in active addiction, if it wasn't for the family I grew up with, I wouldn't be sitting here today. I wouldn't be here in Las Vegas with the recovery that I have today, with the support that I have today. Chances are, without the 12-step fellowship and Desert Hope, American Addiction Centers, I might be 6 feet under. I might be dead, because this disease takes lives every day, and we don't know it until it happens. You know, it happens to us. Since I've been clean, I've lost a lot of friends back home that just weren't willing to give recovery a shot. I've met so many people from Desert Hope, a lot of people I still talk to today. Some of these people went back home to New Hampshire, Delaware, Florida. They're all doing extremely well today, working a program, taking the suggestions that all the people at Desert Hope gave us. And I live by spiritual principles today. Humility, love, acceptance, faith. Faith is one of the biggest ones I have today. I wouldn't have any faith if it wasn't for Desert Hope. Like I mentioned before, when I walked in there, everybody that works there is in recovery, has years clean, years in recovery, and have been in much worse places than I have. So that told me, if they can do it, then I can do it. Since leaving Desert Hope, I have visited them usually every 2 months just to stop in and say hi, let them know I'm still doing well, and I've actually had the pleasure of working for Desert Hope for a short time, working beside the people that were my counselors when I was there. And it was an amazing experience. But, that pretty much sums up my story and where I was, where I am now, and how I made it here. If it wasn't for Desert Hope and American Addiction Centers, I wouldn't be here today. I wouldn't be the person that I am today. Thank you.